It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 193 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because this week I've got a great interview with two of the creators of Invader Zim and the Invader Zim comic now out from Oni Press. Aaron Alexovich and Eric Trueheart talk about the show and how it came to be, as well as the comic and what we have in store there. It's great because the comic really resembles the show, and that's a rare occurrence these days. We also talk about what the future may hold for Invader Zim, so you're going to want to be sure to listen. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Eric Trueheart and Aaron Alexovich, who were involved in Invader Zim, the cartoon show on Nicktoons, and are involved in the new Invader Zim comic from Oni Press. Let's start off with you, Aaron. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
Good. And Eric, how about you?
I'm doing spectacular. How are you, Wayne?
Good, good. I'm so glad this is an Invader Zim comic because I missed that show. The thing I loved about the show was it was the most offbeat, unusual thing I think I've ever seen. And I like that in the show because I've seen plenty of Invader shows in which it's pretty standard stuff. And this is anything but
a lot of Invader shows and shows that are really just straight up exactly what you would expect from an Invader show. But Invader Zim was a different Invader show. Mm-hmm. And we were very proud of that.
Our show had a children's organ theft in it, which makes it very different.
Now, it started back in 2001, according to my research, and ended in, what, 2006 was the last...
Nope.
No? Okay, what's wrong about that?
No, that is true, actually.
Is it?
I think that's when they aired the second season. I thought that it had aired, like, right after the first one, but no. Apparently, they were, like, in the can for a while, and then they came in, like, 2005, 6.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought we'd started airing by 2000, but maybe I was totally wrong about that. Maybe I was just in the little Nickelodeon orange splat cave and nobody told us anything. They told us it would have been airing, but turns out no. They kept us in the dark.
It started, according to what I saw, was it started in 2001 and season 2 aired, and the last new one ended in August of 2006. So when you think of that, it's been almost 10 years, which is, of course, that makes part of the comic hilarious, was because we haven't seen Invader Zim on the face, which what felt like for years. And I got a kick out of that because, you know, it had been years since they'd done it. Now, that doesn't mean the episodes hadn't been airing on Nicktoons, because I started watching them late at night because I was going to work later in the day, and so I was able to stay up late. And I got to watch it. It used to come on like midnight or 1 in the morning on Nicktoons, and I used to always be up that time, so I would watch them. And I would always get a huge kick out of them because I thought they were the greatest. Everything about it I liked. I liked the theme music, and I was always glad to watch it late at night because I could hear the end theme music, which you didn't hear during the day because there were ads running over it.
Right.
And then I didn't realize that. I'm glad they showed it late at night. That seems to be the perfect time, actually.
Yeah, I feel like that's where most people saw the show eventually. Really? It's deep in the night. I don't think it reached the audience it was supposed to at the time it was on.
What time was it on originally?
Was it SNCC? Like, was it like Saturday nights or something like that?
Something like that. And they moved it a couple of times and didn't tell anybody. And then at one point they replaced it with a show called But Ugly Martians in the same time slot. Do you remember But Ugly Martians?
I do. Yeah. Such language. Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. It was good times.
So how did the show get started? Jonan Vasquez, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yep, Jonan Vasquez.
He's listed as kind of the creative force behind all this. Eric, how did this get started? How did you all get involved with this, and how did it get on Nicktoons?
Well, how it got started and how we got involved, I think, are two different questions. it got started, I guess, when Nickelodeon producer Mary Harrington somehow reached out and made contact with Jonan, because I think she had seen his Squee comics and his Johnny the Homicidal Maniacs comic, and of course she thought this would be the perfect person to do a Nickelodeon show. But to give you some background on Mary, she was around at Nickelodeon when they pioneered like Ren and Stimpy, and back in the early days when it was a little bit of a maverick network. So I guess it's not too far outside the realm of possibilities that a comic book artist who is famous for a series about a guy who murders people, that she might see something there. So she reached out to him, is my understanding, and he pitched Invader Zim, and it went back and forth, sort of trying to hammer what the show was. Couple little fun facts. The original pilot originally had Mark Hamill as the voice of Zim, if I recall correctly.
Really? Wow.
Or at least they thought about it. Yeah, and I think even Billy West might have done a pass at it at some point before they settled with Richard Horvitz. And yeah, Nickelodeon was not sure what to make of it when they saw the pilot, but apparently the pilot tested through the roof. Kids saw it and just thought it was the coolest thing they'd ever seen. So they just ran with the show from there.
It's just amazing to me because, you know, really, it wouldn't air on any other network that I can think of. I keep thinking, would that air on the CW? No. Would that air on, you know, different
ABC? Food Network, House and Garden? No. CNN, maybe. Cinemax, maybe late night during the skin portion of the programming, maybe.
Oh, the Skinemax section, sure.
Oh, yeah. No, we tried to sell it, and by we, I mean not me, after it canceled.
Okay. Yeah.
He means me. Yeah, I was totally involved with the marketing of the project.
Oh, really?
And what you didn't realize is that Aaron actually was not empowered to sell the show, and so he actually sold it to about six different networks before they realized what was going on.
He had a mint on that thing, though.
Well, I liked the show because it was so unusual, and it's just, I liked Zim because he had this, you know, maniacal laugh that was great. And that was on there, too. And I like the four main characters. I always got a kick out of the fact that they each had one-syllable names. It was Zim, and then his assistant was Gurr. And then you had Dib, who was the Earth person. And his sister, who was, they were sort of parallels, was Gaz.
Yeah, they almost sound like caveman names or something.
And they all only have three letters each.
Yes, that's true.
So, which means I think if you arrange them in certain configurations in accordance with sacred Mayan geometry, you can, in fact, summon a beast from another dimension. But don't.
Okay, I just I just the episodes were always
tried it. We tried that, but it didn't keep the show on the air, unfortunately.
No, it's
too bad. But it did wreck several buildings in Burbank, so
it was worth it then.
It was for me. So you asked how Aaron and I started on the show, and we started in separate capacities. I got hired as a writer, and it was one of my first writing jobs at a film school because Jonan had, I guess, you know, my agent was sending stuff around, and he read some. I think I wrote a spec South Park back then, which was probably terrible, but it had a lot of pork jokes in it, and Jonan loves pork jokes. So he came in, and I pitched a few things, or rather, they asked me to come in, and I pitched a few things, one of which was Bad, Bad Rubber Piggy, which Jonan really liked, so I wrote that, and then they hired me on as staff, and I was on the writing staff for the pretty much the whole run of the whole miserable, awful experience. It was actually not a mistake.
You're saying that pork is the way to Jonan's heart.
I'm saying anyone who wants Jonan to hire him, start with pork.
Just start writing pork and never stop.
Never, ever, ever, ever stop.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Aaron. How did you get involved then?
Well, I was actually plucked out of animation school. Animation school worked for me the way that it's supposed to work and never does, which is that you, you know, you put in your years in animation school doing your little things and you make your end of the year film. And in theory, producers are supposed to come and see these end of the year films and be incredibly impressed and swipe you up and put you work for them. And that never happens. And through some strange alchemy, which I think might have something to do with those elder gods Eric mentioned. Mm-hmm. It worked for me. So if you summoned those things, Eric, I'd like to thank you officially for that.
I summoned them, but honestly, once I summoned them, they were not in my control.
Mm. Okay, so just destroying Burbank.
Mm-hmm. But they liked your work, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, also, the film that I made was it was very much in Jonan's wheelhouse. I'd say it was kind of a it was a very dark kind of thing, but with a funny kind of feel to it. It was mixing the spooky and the funny, and that's what he likes, and that's what I gave him.
Mm-hmm. Aaron actually just handed him a DVD of Toy Story and said he'd made the whole thing.
It would have given me a better job then. I mean, yeah. Why was I like a character designer if I made if I made Toy Story?
Yeah, well, maybe you should have handed it to someone at Pixar, but they might have been wise to your scam at that point.
Right.
Anyway.
I just kind of wondered, it must have been fun to be in those writing rooms and talking about what's good, the scriptings and what kind of stories you're going to tell. Because, you know, as I said, it's just so offbeat and unusual. It's what everything I've ever seen. How did you guys do that? I mean, was it just you would get together and kind of bounce ideas around?
Well, I got to be honest, we didn't really have a writing room. We all sort of had our small little office caves where we would sit in darkness and fester until some idea came out. Although we all went to lunch together, and there's a particularly cruddy Mexican restaurant in Burbank that was birth to a lot of things, including, I believe, Hamstergeddon and Walk for Your Lives and a few others. But basically, I think we all took the approach. I mean, everyone had their own point of view, and everyone had sort of the kind of stories they like to tell. But I think we all took the approach that we had an opportunity to do something different and weird, and every sort of strange sci-fi idea that had been sitting in the back of our heads, we wanted to sort of give birth to through this mutant birth canal that was Invader Zim, if you'll forgive the metaphor.
Very
yeah,
Cronenbergian,
you can quote
right
me
there.
On the mutant birth canal. I'm very sorry, but
at the Disney next week.
Yes.
As far as like the look of the series, of course, you know, they all had great big heads. Of course, kids can relate to those kinds of things because children often do have larger heads. But I got a big kick out of the way Zim looked with this two strands of hair off the back of his head and two great big red eyeballs and stuff like that. Aaron, did you have much to do with the look, or was that Jonan's thing? How did that come to be?
Those were all pretty much set in place by the time I came on board. Okay. In fact, I think those designs existed before Eric was even there. Those were part of the little pitch package Jonan put together. Yeah, so basically my only dealing with Zim himself was when enduring some horrible trauma or something, and I had to draw him, you know, covered in mud or beaten up or destroyed or this his eye popping out. That's the only time I really got to draw Zim was when he was, you know, in peace, basically.
But Aaron did draw a lot of, I got to say, like, you really nailed Jonan's style, but also you had this knack for drawing characters that were just funny when they were just standing there. So I would walk by Aaron's desk and there would be these little character designs that he stuck to the wall. Many because of the notes on them were ridiculous. But like, I remember there was one sort of riot cop that he drew, which was a soldier with a giant helmet with like a bullhorn on it and the word "Hey" written across the helmet in big letters.
I remember that guy. I don't remember if he ever got used.
I think he got used. I don't know.
Did he?
I don't know.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun to work on that show. I mean, like, our policy was, it was my policy, was that every character, no matter how unimportant, no matter how far in the background they were, had to be distractingly ugly. I think we pulled that off.
I think you did. I think you did.
Any random screen grab of Invader Zim should just be a wonderland of deformity.
Well, I have to ask you guys, because, you know, in Batman the Animated Series, Fox laid down the law on Bruce Timm and said he did a painting one time to show all the things that Fox didn't want him to do. The kids couldn't be in danger, it could be fire, all that kind of stuff. Did Nicktoons at any point or Nickelodeon ever come down to you and say, okay, you can't do that?
All the time.
Did they really? Oh.
Now, here's the thing in television. And first of all, I mean, there's certain rules that you just sort of follow when you're writing a children's show that are sort of common sense. But in addition to those, there are often a whole, well, I don't don't even esoteric a list of esoteric things that the network doesn't want you to do, maybe because they've had bad experiences in the past. Mm-hmm. They may or may not be sensible, but every network has them. Like Disney doesn't want you breaking any glass at all, mm-hmm. because some child might break a glass and then sue Walt.
Oh my God, the children will know glass is breakable, and then we're
it's horrible. I know. So there were, but like with a lot of S&P stuff, you would, and that's TV talk for standards and practices. Mm-hmm. You would write something and then you would get a huge list of things back. Actually, sometimes it was huge. Sometimes it wasn't, of just things like, please don't do that. Look, seriously, please don't do that. And some of them were kind of reasonable, mm-hmm. and others kind of weren't. I know after, I hate to even mention 9/11, but after that, like they refused to air Hamstergeddon because, you know, it might be too traumatic, which I think there's a difference between terrorists and giant hamsters, but you know, I mean, I get it. So there were things, and there was a constant negotiation process, like in Bestest Friend, I guess it is, where at the end they pull out Keefe's eyeballs and replace them with robot eyes. Mm. That happens in Shadow, mm-hmm. and so like they could do that, but only if you saw it in Shadow, mm-hmm. and that made it.
That's almost more horrifying, though. Mm-hmm. Like if you did it straight on, you could. Maybe he's bloodless or something. They just pop out really quick. You get a little mm-hmm. tendon stretch and you're done. But mm-hmm. if it's in Shadow, you can imagine all kinds of nightmarish things happening.
Yeah.
Gouts of blood pouring out.
But you know, it's funny because, same going back to Batman the Animated Series, oftentimes they would do things off-panel. You know, you'd see the shadow on the wall. Yeah. And so they actually thought that was scarier to have those things happen that way.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So that was it's always hilarious when the network was trying to stop something from being scarier, they actually made it scarier.
They made it more horrifying, yeah.
Which I like.
You should have done, like, the most nightmarish R-rated episode ever, but have it done all in silhouette.
Yeah, but Sir just goes on a stabbing spree.
Yeah. Just carnage everywhere.
Now, see, I liked, one of the characters I liked the most was Gurr. Of course, it's spelled G-I-R, not G-R-R, as some people want to call it. But I liked the fact
some
that he was...
Were wrong.
Yeah, well,
yeah, just
I like the fact that he did not take Zim seriously 99% of the time. You know, he would dress up like a dog. I mean, you know, how demeaning can you get to your sidekick but to do all these kinds of things to poor little Gurr? And I always felt for him all the time because he was just, there is poor Zim trying to be the greatest invader that there's ever been. And of course, he's talking to these two taller ones back on the home planet. And they laugh hysterically at everything he says off the microphone. And poor Gurr is just kind of like, oh, well, it's all good, you know, kind of stuff. And I always kind of thought there was some sort of an interesting play on personalities. That there are a lot of people like Gurr who they end up being the sidekicks to the most horrible of people, but they don't seem to care. You know, they don't seem to mind it.
Yeah, well, I don't think Gurr noticed all of the horrible things being done to him. He's just oblivious. That was his character.
Yeah, Gurr is very rarely coherent, but it's a very specific kind of incoherence. And, you know, there's the, is it, I forget what episode it is where he's, I think Zim tells him to work the controls and suddenly you see Gurr's point of view and there's a whole bunch of dancing weenies on the console singing to him. And that's sort of, I think, what reality looks like to Gurr all the time.
Yeah, and it's kind of beautiful, actually.
It really is. And we always have, like, now that we're writing the comic again, every so often I'll write a little thing and Jonan sends me a note back saying, you have to be careful not to make Gurr too useful. Like, you can't make Gurr too coherent or practical. Like, it seems like Gurr's actually obeying orders, which is something Gurr is simply not capable of doing.
Let's go. Okay, that's a perfect segue to get into talking about the comic. We've talked about the TV show. How did the comic come to be? Because honestly, right now in the comics, there's a number of comics that are based on cartoon shows. Like several Cartoon Network shows have their own comics. And I just thought Oni Press is just the perfect place for Invader Zim because they like to do offbeat sort of stuff there too. So I was just, when I heard it was going to be off of them, I thought it was great. Now, when I heard you guys were going to be involved with it, you know, sometimes these shows, they have absolutely nothing to do with the creators. And when that happens, it's like nothing like the show. But I've seen the first two issues that have come out and it's just like the original show.
Thank you.
Great, great stuff.
Thank you.
Where Zim has been all these years made me laugh right out loud. I just thought that was wonderful stuff, and I won't spoil it because I think you got to read that one. It's great.
You do got to read that one.
But how did it happen? Did they approach you? Did somebody approach them? How did this come?
Yeah, well, the first I heard about it was about 2 years ago at San Diego Comic-Con. Jonan just, he told me, I think Oni is making a Zim comic. It turned out that they had just bought the rights to it. I mean, that's a thing you can do in the world.
You can buy the rights to the Invader Zim comic if you have enough money, and if you now can talk Oni into letting them go. So any of us can buy the rights to do that. We just then would probably want to find a way to actually do it and make enough money to justify the money we spent on the rights.
Like, but find a publisher, for instance. You might want to do that.
But yeah, I guess Oni just approached Nickelodeon and said, let's do a comic. And I don't quite know exactly how Jonan got involved. I know they were talking to him, and for a while, whenever you would talk to Jonan about, so what do you want to do with Invader Zim comic, he had this thought about, he wanted to like bring in all kinds of other different artists and writers and do sort of weird interpretations of just other people's take on what Invader Zim could or would be, like a sort of all...
Still sounds awesome to me.
Which still sounds awesome. You know, it's like this alt universe, like get Mobius to draw Invader Zim. Is Mobius dead?
Is he dead? He is, but let's not let that stop us.
No? Rob Liefeld. So that was the original gleam in his head, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know where along the line they decided, well, let's just launch this traditionally, just sort of telling the stories like we used to. And, you know, but everything goes through Jonan. So it is his point of view and his tastes and his whole concept of these characters, but taken onto the page.
So he's the grand poobah of Invader Zim. He's the one that everything has to go through.
I think it would have been really weird to do it without any involvement from him, just because he's such a part of comics, the comics world, unlike a lot of other, you know, cartoon creators. He's deeply rooted in the comic world, so everyone would have been asking, why is he not involved with this thing? So,
very cool.
I'm glad.
Yeah. It's a great pair of comics. Now, the first two issues are a complete story, seems like.
It seems like, but no. No, okay. It is. No, it is. I'm lying. We launched with a two-parter. I think partly because we figured, you know, everyone would go out and buy the first issue and then not buy the second issue. And this would be a way of enticing people to actually buy the second issue and also read it, which is a crazy idea.
Yeah, that's the key part. That's the part I like best.
And also, I think when Jonan sat down to write the story, he realized it was going to take more than one issue and wanted to do it justice and give room for Aaron's art to be there. So it is a two-parter. If you stopped at issue one, you've made a mistake. Keep going.
Now, one of the things I like in the book is a character of sorts that we haven't seen before, and that's the ship that Dib creates to be able to follow Zim into space. And even the ship bears down on Dib and tells him what a terrible person he is and how he hates the thought of his rear end sitting on the seat that is in the ship and stuff like that.
I love that part.
I'm sitting there laughing, going like, man, this poor old Dib, he can't catch a break no matter what he does.
That was actually set up on the show, wasn't it? Was that an episode that was made? Yeah.
He gets the ship in an episode called Dib Ship Rising, which an episode that is a constant thorn in my side because there's a huge visual gag at the end that we didn't take advantage of that I didn't catch in the storyboard. But at the end of Tack the Hideous New Girl, Tack's ship ends up crashing behind Dib's house, if I remember correctly, and maybe I remember that wrong. And so he takes it into his garage, and then by Dib Ship Rising, he has it running again, only I believe it takes the form of Dib and then later tries to kill him.
Right, yeah. Sometimes I get confused about which episodes were actually produced and which weren't, because we had like 12 episodes like in the process when it was canceled. I wasn't sure if we actually made that one or not, but no, I'm recalling the images now.
Okay, because I didn't remember that one. Maybe one I haven't seen, because at night they didn't seem to show them all, because I have never seen the Christmas episode either, which I want to see. And I want to see that. Hopefully what will happen is when they get around the holidays, they'll start to show those kinds of things again. Because I'd like to see that. Because as I read about it, it makes me laugh, just the concept of it.
So it'll get you in the holiday spirit. You know, it's such a festive episode.
You can sing the Boots of Doom song. It's a fun song.
It is.
That's right, because somebody was saying that when they heard the comic was coming, they were going to start singing the Boots of Doom song every day until it came in, and until they got that first issue. So I got a kick out of that.
Who was saying that? Can we?
I don't remember the name of the person.
Refer them to the authorities?
We can help you. Do you need a place to stay?
I got to sing the Doom song now. Doom, 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 doom.
Would you please stop singing?
Proximity warning. Planet ahead.
Grr! We're here! We're finally here!
tuned in. Ooh, what's that? Planet Earth.
Well, I like the third one that's going to come out on September 23rd, and it's about,
yes,
dare we say what it is. Of course, it's public knowledge out there. It's the Star Donkey.
The Star, yes, Donkey.
Did you want to talk, yes, a little bit about what that issue is going to be about?
Oh, I dare not mention the name of the Star Donkey for fear of attracting the Star Donkey's wrath.
I think the Star Donkey should speak for itself. But he's a donkey from beyond the stars. That's all.
He's a donkey from beyond the stars. Yeah, and Jonan and I sat down to kick around a whole bunch of stories, and we kicked them the ideas. We kicked them, and they did
not.
The
only way they'll learn.
Yeah, but the Star Donkey one was the one that leapt out at us. And also, when I wrote it, I knew Aaron was going to draw it, so I made reference to Jack Kirby a couple of points in the comic script just to irritate him. But no.
Jack Kirby.
I know, but I was like throwing down the Kirby gauntlet. Like, can you do something Kirby-esque and also
the style? Yeah. You can try.
Yeah, but the Star Donkey, I think everyone's really going to enjoy the Star Donkey, and I hope the end infuriates at least one person.
Oh, it will.
And then you got issue 4, which we were talking about the two Gaul guys. They're actually called the Almighty Tallest.
Yes.
Which I think is great. And they were just, they were my favorite parts of the show, too, because they would sit there and there's Zim trying to be a very serious conqueror, and there's the two of them laughing hysterically at him. They'd turn the mic off and just die laughing at him. And, of course, in the first comic, they even have forgotten that he existed. Which,
yeah,
I thought was funny. So
which was probably, a real achievement for them because they never liked him.
No. That's the funny part. There's all that stuff that happened back, and what sent him there was whenever they would allude to it, it was always rather funny because you don't expect that from a conqueror to be kind of sent off to this planet that they don't care about to conquer it.
Right.
I loved all that. I thought that was so funny about that.
Yeah. Well, there's something about Jonan's point of view, and there's something about most of the characters in the show, at least the two leads, Zim and Dib, is that they're just... they're both sort of the brunts of cosmic jokes. Mm-hmm. Both Zim and Dib operate under huge delusions of their own importance, and they're constantly finding themselves on the wrong ends of, I don't know, of luck or whatever. Like, Zim's entire mission is just a complete farce, designed to just get him out of the hair of his bosses who can't stand him. Mm-hmm. And Dib, no matter what he does, even when he's right about his paranormal investigations, never seems to get respect from anybody. Mm-hmm. So there's just something about that dynamic that I think is funny and sad, very sad.
Yeah, I rarely feel bad for them, though. They're just everyone on this show and everyone in this comic is such a jerk. I mean, this should be called Space Jerks, I think.
Well, what happens to Dib, really, I have to say I felt sorry for him at the end of the second issue. There's something that takes place and his reaction to it made me feel sorry for him.
It is it's particularly tragic.
Yes.
It's probably the meanest thing that's ever happened in this universe.
Although Dib's Wonderful Life of Doom on the...
cruel too, yeah.
Was particularly cruel in an amazing way.
Yeah.
That's the episode where Dib throws a muffin at Zim's head and then denies doing it. And then just to get the truth out of him, Zim creates an entire fictional life inside a virtual reality where Dib lives out his entire existence as a hero, only at the very end to confess in his elder years on a talk show that, yes, he threw a muffin at Zim's head. And then it's, aha! And then you reveal that it's been a holodeck the whole time.
Does he literally live those years or hallucination?
I think we gloss over it. I don't know.
I like to think he actually lived every moment of that.
You know, it's like Picard in that episode of Next Generation
where he lives the whole life with
the flute. You know, he marries the flute and then he raises a family with that flute. And then he's been on the bridge the whole time.
That's just sad. It's just so new. But anyway, that 4-issue miniseries will be over on October 14th. And if it does well, would you guys be up to do another one of these Invader Zim miniseries? I'd like to see it.
Oh, it's actually not a miniseries.
Oh, it's not?
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, I didn't know
that. I am working on issue 5.
Really? Oh, I'm glad to find that out, because everywhere I've looked, always just said as issues 1 through 4. And so I'm happy to hear that. So, man, that's good.
Maybe you know something we don't.
Well, I hope
that
not.
That could be.
I'd rather you guys were right, because I'd rather see more of these kinds of good things, because it's such a, as I said, it is just one of those rare finds on television that just is such a delight to watch. And the comic is just as good, just a joy to read, because it's just so awesome.
Oh, I'm glad.
So
awesome. I'm glad people are liking it because we work on it. First of all, I know there's going to be at least an issue 5 because Jonan is writing it right now. Mm. And I've seen Aaron has done, you've done covers for it.
I did the cover, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So unless that's going to be a horrible dib-like joke on all of us, we think that's happening. And
there's definitely a 5. There's definitely a 6 being done by someone else.
Oh. Yeah. Jonan may start to get more experimental as the series progresses. So how many more I'll be writing, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Jonan's going to be involved in it in the foreseeable future, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much longer Aaron's going to be involved. But Zim himself shows every sign of continuing to go on.
Well, I'll have to ask, of course, you know, because sometimes, like with Scooby-Doo, and nothing to compare Scooby-Doo to Invader Zim, but Scooby-Doo has come out with these directed DVD movies. Any chance that Invader Zim might go that route, that we might get Invader Zim animated films on Blu-ray or something?
Oh, you know, there's talk all the time. You know, things pop up now and then, but you never know. I think here's the key. If everybody buys 2 million copies of this comic each, I guarantee you they will greenlight a new series.
Yeah, you have my word.
Yeah, 1 million copies, we can do it.
You have Aaron's word from me. Yeah, there. I mean, for all the people who are wondering if Zim is ever going to come back, there is always talk. Mm-hmm. The people who canceled Zim at Nickelodeon have long ago moved on. They don't work there anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're all dead. They got old. Some of them died maybe younger than they should have. They didn't live right. They got sick. Nothing about how they treated Zim. Just what happens in life. But many of them are still alive. They have families. They're doing well. But the point is they're not at Nickelodeon anymore. That's my point. Mm-hmm. And the people who are there now are always sort of looking for ways to revive the show. Sometimes they're looking a little harder than other times. Mm-hmm. And I know Jonan, if he does something, wants to do something interesting and different. He doesn't want to just, hey, let's do more and pick up where we left off. So I know there's been talk of let's do specials, let's do movies. And then a lot of times it's like, well, the money doesn't work for us and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So there's always talk. I don't know if that means anything will happen anytime soon, but it's never dead. Like Star Trek, it's never dead.
Well, my idea is how many Teenage Turtles shows can you do? I mean, you know, there's got to be. Somebody wants to do something else every once in a while because, you know, they've got Teenage Turtles version 6 or 8 or something going on right now. And I'm going like, man, I've seen this thing enough times in the last 20 years that I could probably quote what they're going to do. Well, they do it. So I like something that I can't guess, and that's Invader Zim. I have no idea what you guys are going to do. And I like that in a TV show.
I'm thinking a Ninja Turtle mashup. Let's get the turtles and Zim together.
Yeah.
People love mashups. Come on.
Yeah.
Let's get that little guy down in the sewers.
That's true.
Eastman and Laird, another Ferrari. Sure, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it for them.
You know what? There's that slot in Laird's garage that's just Ferrari shaped next to the other 6.
Oh, it's scary that you know that.
Don't tell him.
Okay.
Well, you guys, it's great, and I hope Invader Zim is a huge success and continues to just keep chugging along because I need more of that in my reading and in my TV viewing. So you guys keep up the good work and tell Jonan to keep it up.
Thank you.
Well, Wayne, thank you very much for having us on your show.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, good to talk with you, and I love the book, and I can't wait to read the next issues, and we'll keep buying it as long as you make it.
Yay!
We will keep making it as long. Well, actually, I have no idea. But as long as people keep buying it, someone will keep making it.
Yeah, someone will.
Yeah. Everyone, beware the star donkey.
Okay, thanks. Finally!
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next week as we count down to episode number 200. But until then, keep reading your comics.